You've probably heard that the Deficit Supercommittee, six Republicans, six Democrats charged with finding $1.2 trillion in spending cuts, is at a stalemate, that they have to have a proposal to the Congressional Budget Office Monday, and it has to go to Congress on Wednesday, that if they don't come up with a plan, across-the-board cuts automatically kick in. And you've probably also heard each side blade the other for the gridlock. Republicans say they've offered the previously inconceivable tax increases in exchange for keeping the Bush-era tax cuts that are set to expire. Democrats saying the proposed cuts are paltry because they're coupled with the Bush-era tax cuts, and that they are willing to accept some cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, but what's on the table is too much. The committee launched in August. You could have missed practically this entire news cycle about it, and you'd still be okay because we're at a very familiar impasse. Let's dig deep with Gail Chadha, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, who joins us from Capitol Hill. Gail, welcome.
Thank you.
And what I just said isn't really true. You know, there have been shifts on each side, and you saw them coming a couple months ago. Let's start with the Republicans. You know, many had pledged to Grover Norquist's no tax promise, but they've backed off of that.
That's been, to me, a very interesting development because it is critical to what Republicans like to refer to as their brand, that unlike President Bush the First, who said, read my lips, no new taxes, and then violated his pledge, the Republicans since then have not done that. They have really kept tax breaks off the table consistently, even through that very intense round of negotiations over raising the debt limit, with the threat of default, you know, hanging over their heads. They still refuse to raise taxes. But between August 2nd and now, there has been a sea change in Republican ranks on that front, and that's what we're seeing play out here.
Well, and it's, you know, they would say at some political jeopardy. You're telling us that the Koch brothers, who support so many Republican candidates, are threatening to punish the ones who violate that no-tax pledge?
This is just the beginning of the firefight in conservative ranks on this point. You have groups like Americans for Prosperity, and we're not entirely clear who funds them, but it's largely, you know, the Koch brothers are identified with it, but other, you know, wealthy donors. They started out opposing earmarks and then moved to the tax front. And they are saying, look, we're paying attention to Republicans that violate this pledge. Other groups like the Club for Growth, Pat Toomey, the Republican on the panel, the supercommittee, who made the first break on this, offering $250 billion in tax hikes, is a former president of the Club for Growth. There's a different thought there. They are focused on, is it possible to eliminate things in the tax code that actually promote growth? And shouldn't that be the focus, jobs and growth?
So in other words, take away some of the tax breaks and such, and we want to get deeper into that. But just staying with this idea that Republicans like the Pennsylvania Republican Pat Toomey, you know, have broken with Grover Norquist's pledge, some Democrats are saying it's disingenuous, that they're, you know, they're looking at closing some loopholes and some tax breaks, but it's all about a plan to keep the Bush tax cuts, which are much larger. That in other words, they're doing this in exchange for those Bush-era tax breaks.
That's right. But what's striking about this is that Democrats, too, set aside for a minute the tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans. Most of the money in the Bush tax cuts, believe it or not, is still in the broader tax breaks across the range. And no Democrat wants to get rid of that. So there's agreement on that point, that the Bush tax cuts, except for the wealthiest Americans, are going to preserve. The fight is over, the wealthiest, and that is what Republicans have put on the table here. Yes, we'll give you some cuts, but do not cut the tax cut breaks for the wealthiest. It's not even clear how many Democrats would support that. When it came to a vote in the Senate, it didn't pass.
Well, and even President Obama, when you talk about the broader effect of the Bush-era tax cuts, he talked about how keeping them would put about $2,000 back in the pockets of many American families. But again, the fight is over, that, you know, there may be $35,000 or $350,000 that would return to the very wealthy. We're coming up in just a couple minutes on a break, Gail, so just touch on how Democrats feel they've compromised. I mean, they feel they have been open to cuts and entitlements, but do we know what kind?
No, we don't. I just left a briefing with Speaker Boehner on this point. who says, you know, in all the negotiations I've had with the White House and now with the super committee, Democrats have yet to put anything in writing. So we can't, you know, there are individual Democrats who are saying this, and the press reports it as a Democratic offer. But it is striking that Republicans claim there has never been anything in paper on it, and so it doesn't constitute a real offer. And so that's where we are. The deliberations are secret. All I can tell you is what I'm getting from leaks, and who knows what's motivating them. So there's going to be a wonderful history to be written about this, but in the middle of it, it is very hard to say what actually constitutes a real offer and what's just a trial balloon.
Gail Chadwick on the phone from Capitol Hill, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. And Gail, just quickly, we talked about how Republicans have said they've been willing to get rid of some tax breaks. Just tell us a little more about what those might be. Is it, you know, deductions for fancy yachts and jets? What about the mortgage deduction that so many, you know, middle Americans take?
They're steering away from that. The focus is on the wealthy and limiting the total deductions that they can take in, as a percentage of income. So that's, you know, one of the more interesting things to me is the debate within both parties over who constitutes a millionaire these days. Are there good millionaires and bad millionaires? Republicans even are now saying that, you know, millionaires who've made their money, you know, by gaming the government, those, they're bad. Millionaires who've made their money with private businesses, that's good. So the question of who gets taxed is becoming a really important one. And the distinction that Republicans want to make in this deal is that we'll just limit the extent of breaks they can take. They're not talking about the mortgage deduction yet.
Yeah. And you say that this kind of, you know, the compromises we've been hearing about on both sides are sounding awfully, you know, I mean, I don't want to be too hopeful, but sound a little bit like bipartisanship. And yet we're hearing about lawmakers, you know, writing letters to the committee, some questioning if it was a good idea. What's the sense?
Well, this is very typical at the end of a process. Let's take the House Republicans. You've had 40 of them sign a bipartisan letter saying it's critical that we go big on this deal, that we really solve the problem, and that everything be on the table, including tax breaks. That was a big step for them because it puts them on record, you know, violating this pledge. On the other hand, just this week you had Patrick McHenry, a Republican in probably one of the safest seats that exists, coming up with a letter signed by 50 House members, and then I think it's now up to 70, saying under no circumstances do we raise taxes for any reason, that's a critical part of our brand. So that's, you know, that's fighting within the base. But in the end, I think you really have to look to leadership on this. And John Boehner, who has had a meticulous sense of how far he can go with a very divided Congress, is so far sounding like he feels that this can be pulled together.
One of the other suggestions that we're hearing as we trip through this, the Republican, Pat Toomey, again, who's put forward a plan that calls for some raising some taxes, in some cases by getting rid of deductions, that under this plan, people might be taxed on some of their employer-provided health care. How are Democrats reacting to that?
Well, anything to do with health care is something Democrats want to keep off the table. And it's, you know, it's a striking thing because health care increases is the big driver of deficits, according to the public hearings that the super committee has held. But they really don't want, you know, especially with the Supreme Court decision pending over President Bush's, President Obama's health care reform, they really don't want to go too deep into health care. It touches on entitlements. It touches on their signature achievement of the last Congress. So from what I can tell from looking outside, it's something they'd rather not get into.
But Democrats do want to add, I think it's something like $300 billion for job creation, and they would take that money, or it would be partly paid for, by the money that's not going to be spent on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Is that kind of, you know, yes, the drawdowns are happening, but they haven't happened yet. So is there, I don't want to call it magical thinking, but is there some of that kind of thinking in this? You know, well, if this ends, we can put it over here?
Well, there's about $1 trillion that you could potentially claim by winding down those wars. Trouble is, it's a decision that was made months before the super committee, so can it really count? John Boehner was asked that today, too, and he said, look, that money ought to be banked. It shouldn't be used to offset anything. We ought to find new new cuts here and not depend on that. So we'll see. I think in the end, this whole mess is going to be resolved by two people, possibly three, John Boehner, Speaker of the House, and Harry Reid, Majority Leader of the Senate. They have been back of this all along. They're meeting regularly. And if this very severe impasse continues, I think it's just going to be written in their offices and pass out through the super committee. If there is a deal, I think there's a growing sense that it's going to come through that avenue.
Well, and if there isn't, you know, we keep hearing that these automatic cuts kick in, that the military will suffer the most, that many of those automatic cuts will be from the military, whereas Democrats are quietly saying, well, those automatic cuts don't hit entitlements as much, so maybe that's not as bad an outcome.
That you are hitting on a very important issue. What is the status? Can one Congress bind another? I asked Speaker Boehner that directly a few weeks ago, and he said he felt that it did, that the reason they have these draconian cuts is that we need a solution to this, we need a deal, and they are in place. But there are many Republicans who are already calling and saying that the first thing they'll do in a new Congress is get rid of a sequester because it will destroy the military.
The sequester is the name of that automatic kick-in. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sorry for that
terrible
word.
No.
But you also have President Obama's Defense Department saying, you know, these cuts will hollow out the military. So it's not just Republicans that are making this claim, and I think it is an open question. The president has said, if he's still president in 2013, that he will forbid that sequester to be undone, that the automatic cuts to be undone. You had Harry Reid also, Majority Leader, say today he will oppose it. But remember, between now and then, there's an election. A lot can change in an election, including who is Majority Leader, who is president, and who is Speaker of the House.
Gail Chadwick, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. I think we actually explained this, Gail. But, of course, if anyone has questions, hearnow.org. We'd love to hear from you. But, Gail Chadwick, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.